This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Monty Walden. How are you, Monty?
Hi, Chris. Really good, thanks.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. We're here in Wine to Wine, which is in Verona, Italy. First trip to Italy in probably about 8 years now for me. So it was quite nice getting here.
We're in Verona.
Verona, yeah.
So this is for anybody that's come to Vinitaly. This is basically where Vinitaly is held. And above the big area where all the wines are shown, there are a few offices. And this is where we do our podcasts.
Yeah,
and this is where we're podcasting from today with Chris.
Yep. And you're actually the host of the Italian Wine Podcast.
Yep.
Now, I was talking to Stevie Kim, who's your boss. And I didn't really cover too much about the Italian Wine Podcast because I thought, well, I'll have a bit of a chat to you about it. But, you know, just briefly, I've had you on the show before. We've even had a few industry forums where we've gone a little bit hammer and tong at each other.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, on organics, yeah, we have slightly different views. That was good. That was good. That was an event in London with about sustainability with huge multinationals and us two. Wasn't it? It really was. It was all the big drinks multinationals and two sort of wine geeks.
Yeah. No, it was good fun. It was good fun. You were famous in the UK anyway a few years back for Channel 4 or Channel 5's the Chateau Monty.
Yep, Channel 4, yeah.
And what was that about?
Basically, that was a six-part observational documentary on me making a Carignan red wine in the Roussillon part of France, not far from the Spanish border, and doing it biodynamically.
Biodynamic, yeah, exactly. And you're a bit of a biodynamic guy.
Yep.
I had you on the show a while ago talking about biodynamics, and you and I don't always agree, because I'm not the most, I wouldn't say, I don't have a problem with organics, and biodynamics starts to get into that religious side of things, and I'm just not really into
that. But I'm not into that either, honestly.
I thought you were.
No, absolutely not. For me, it's a tool.
Yeah.
It's a tool just to make better wine by really looking after your soil and trying to create what's called a self-sustaining organism, like to try and be as self-sufficient as you can in terms of your fertility. I'm not into all the weirdy-beardy stuff. So basically I get it in the neck from the biodynamic ultras, and of course I get it in the neck from sort of some conventional farmers. But I'm honestly not into that stuff. I do it on results. I've made wine in both hemispheres on conventional, organic, sustainable and biodynamic estates, and for me biodynamics works the best. I know that there is some dogma and stuff attached to it. I honestly don't get into that.
Yeah.
I'm sort of shunned by everybody. By the biodynamic ultras and from conventional ultras as well. And in a way, being in the middle is not such a bad place to be.
Yeah. I like that you call them the ultras.
Well, they are. Yeah. They're very. I mean, also the biodynamic ultras, the original biodynamic farmers, they didn't drink alcohol. They said it interfered with your spiritual development.
Ah.
Now, listen, that may well be true, and that's fine. It's a perfectly valid position to hold.
Yeah.
But I think wine has done the biodynamic movement a big favour, because in wine, as you know, we're all obsessed about the changes in taste from different soils or different microclimates. And I think those differences are accentuated by farming that really does try to work with nature. And that's a loaded term. And I think biodynamics does that when it's done properly.
Okay, I don't want to talk about biodynamics.
Nor do I. Let's talk about something else.
Hey, actually, just still on that, because I'm going to talk about Italian.
This is the killer question, but he softened me up with a couple of soft ones, right? And now there's going to be like a hammer blow. Go on, just hit me with it, baby.
Natural wine.
Okay. Well, we're probably on the same page on that. I think the best natural wine producers really understand the microbiology involved in winemaking, whether it's yeast, fungi, or bacteria, and the worst ones don't. And focus on the knots. We don't add this, or we don't add that, or that doesn't make wine. It's what did you do? What I want people to tell me what you did do, rather than what you don't do.
Yeah. Now that's a fair call, actually, because I think non-interventionist winemaking's fine.
Yeah, sure. No worries. Yeah.
But you're still choosing when to pick it. You're still choosing when to start the fermentation. Or you're still choosing the extraction levels. You know, there's a lot of decisions. And to say you're not intervening is just bollocks.
Yeah, one of the key ways of looking at it, I think, is often you'll have a natural winemaker that says, we bought these fantastic used barrels from X winery, and we're wild fermenting. Well, you're not, because X winery use the cultured yeast, and those cultured yeast are going to be in the staves, and they're aggressive, and they will overtake the natural yeast that are fermenting wine. So actually, your wine is probably fermented with the cultured yeast.
Yeah.
And it's your lack of curiosity and knowledge that allows you to say, quite clearly and quite honestly, quotes from your worldview, yeah, it was a wild ferment. I didn't add any yeast. You didn't.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean to say that added yeast aren't in your wine. So that's a kind of little detail, I think, where we all need to be a little bit careful. An organic and biodynamic conventional, they all make boo-boos when it comes to claiming what they do or didn't do. And I think that's one area where the natural wine movement could possibly tighten up a little bit in terms of precision.
Yeah, no, that's a fair comment, actually. I agree with that, actually.
Two fair comments already. What's going on? Yeah, oh, this is gonna, are they going to grill me?
No, certainly not, mate. No, well, later on, maybe.
Just warming the Barbie up now, aren't you?
Yeah. Just softening you up, mate.
Glass of natural wine as I frazzle on the heat of your questions.
No, I've never really done anything. The only person I've ever wanted to do a hatchet job on is some of the people in the UK health industry.
Right.
They're the only ones I've ever thought, do you know what? I really just want to rip you to pieces.
Well, as in what, danger of alcohol and things like that? Or?
Yeah, just some of those people. Because some of the information they give out is very blinkered. Some of it is just not right, you know. But anyway, let's not worry about that.
Facts, dear boy. Facts.
That's
what Churchill said.
Let's talk about the Italian Wine Podcast.
Okay.
So It's up to about 150 something shows, and how long have you been going? Because it almost seemed like it started last week.
Yeah, but most of our listeners, it's like a lifetime. They feel like it's a lifetime. They're getting we're gradually wearing them down. Actually, well, it really started. I mean, when I was small, my dad in the war, my dad was in intelligence. He was into recording stuff, and I used to go out with him when I was small, and he would record on a reel to reel, which is the size of this table, huge, great piece of very
heavy.
Yeah,
my dad used to have one of those.
Right, well, there you go. We got a lot. And I love this idea of audio interviewing, and maybe that was what pushed me into becoming a journalist in the end. I love this oral history and interviewing people and getting information, because you learn a lot. Mm. And anyway, I got into wine, and I have done some audio interviews. I started audio interviewing people in the early 2000s, but on a mini disc, just for myself, yeah, and listening to them back. And when Stevie Kim of An Italian International contacted me about 2 or 3 years ago, and I was doing some work with her on Italian wine, she said, why don't we just do a podcast? Okay, let's go for it. And there we go.
So 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay, because I've only really been aware of it for about a year and a half. So.
Yeah, no, I think we've been doing it for, my memory's terrible, it's at least 2 years.
Okay.
Because we've done at least 2 Vinitalies, so.
Yeah.
We're coming up to our third one quite soon, so.
Okay, yeah. Cool. And tell me about the format of the show. It's called the Italian Wine Podcast. It is available on iTunes, and I presume
SoundCloud.
I've subscribed to it on my phone, and it's a funny app that you must. I don't know where it gets its RSS feeds, but it
doesn't. Does it work or not?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's all right.
No, it works all right. So, yeah, you're on SoundCloud. Stevie was making a big thing about different platforms like SoundCloud and things like that. Whereas I just publish an RSS feed and say, you know, and most of the sort of apps seem to find my RSS feed. So,
we'd get you as a consultant.
Yeah. I'm bloody expensive.
Yeah, I know you are, but I know I've met your Swiss bankers after the last podcast, and they'll be fine. We'll find a way of paying you, and it'll be well worth it, mate. Honestly.
Yeah, no, I'm not the best person to consult with. I just get on with it.
It's your wife, you know, Cayman Islands, Panama. Yeah. We can do it. It's fine.
That's right. Yeah. The show, it's in English.
It is. Sometimes it's in Italian as well.
Oh, is it?
If we have an Italian-only speaker, we can do it. I can do it in Italian. Even though my partner, who is Italian, says, hey, Monty, your Italian is a shit. She doesn't quite say that, but her English is very good, by the way.
Stevie says something along those lines,
actually.
No. He's got a very English accent, as Italian.
Oh, but that's quite nice, though, isn't it? I love hearing Italians speaking English when they've got, like, an Italian accent. It's great.
Yeah, no, it sounds nice. And they wave their hands around.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't do that. I just, if I'm waving, it means I need help.
Yeah.
Looking for a word.
I'm the worst, actually. When I'm talking to an Italian who doesn't speak English, I just speak loudly and slowly and wave my arms. And I figure they must understand what I'm saying. They don't. Okay. Well, I've probably just offended everybody that's Italian. So,
but the idea really behind the podcast was there are so many great stories to tell. And we obviously see the podcast, as I'm sure you do, as about storytelling. And via the storytelling and the entertainment factor, you can actually educate either students or people in the wine trade so that they can make more informed decisions when it comes to working with or learning about Italian wine. So it is a minefield, as you know. More native grape varieties than any other country on the planet. Hugely complex DOC, DOCG, GT system. A lot of overlapping denominations. It's a real minefield out there. And we just hope that with the podcast we can energise people and inform people as well as entertain them about what Italian wine is and what it is not.
Okay. And so, over that 152 shows, it's, well, you just interviewed me, so it's not every Italian, is it?
No, but we have we talked to importers. Before you, we interviewed an importer from Slovakia, for example. So we're interested, very much interested in the trade side as well, the actual mechanics. We've interviewed sommeliers from New York, who are very, very influential, or importers, distributors. So we're not just focused on the producers. We haven't yet, I don't think, interviewed anybody on the packaging side, but I'm sure that will come. We're not just exclusively talking to producers. Anything to do with Italian wine, or even wine in general, to be honest, is what we're interested in.
Yeah, okay.
And we can try and keep it nice and light. And we can have an interview that maybe lasts 5 minutes. We can have one that lasts half an hour. Obviously, they're not live, as is, this interview also is not live, so we can just cut out any flubs and mistakes and things, or anything that's really boring, or we go really off track, to keep it nice and light so we don't bore the listeners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah, both of them. Over the time you've been doing the show, over 2 or 3 years now, you must have... Sometimes you get into a little bit of a rut. So, for example, I've done about 550 something odd shows at this stage, and I still haven't really needed to repeat myself too much. You know, when I first started out, it was very basic. You know, always explained every term I used. But after about 200-300 shows, you sort of go, oh, do you know what? Do I need to explain traditional method fermentation or whatever? And you start to.
Funny, I was going to ask you about that.
Oh yeah.
Well, no, I was coming on the train yesterday. I thought, oh, you know, sparkling wine, you just don't get it. Can you explain traditional method?
I can.
No, you can. Seriously, that's like Prosecco, right? It's just traditional method, isn't it? Yeah. Lambrusco.
Yeah.
Am I going?
See, you're just doing what I did to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, Monty interviewed me, and he was asking me difficult questions that I would about Italian wines, and I was like, "Oh, Suave, you know that grape variety." Oh no, can't get it. Oh no,
we're gonna have that on a loop, by the way.
Yeah, I know, it'll be like all Chris's bad pronunciation.
Piccadilly Circus in London, flashing lights. You know, Suave is a grape variety. There we
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
We all make mistakes.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah, you're a little bit more than most, but I'm joking.
So, but 152 shows, what sort of shows do you find the most interesting?
It's often the people that you think are probably going to be a little bit boring. You know, it could be a sales manager from a cooperative, for example. Mm. Oh, this is going to be like the longest 10 minutes of my life. But actually, you learn an incredible amount about an aspect of the market that you didn't even know existed.
Yeah.
And I think they can be fascinating. And then you can have... producers who are really into their particular way of farming. I'm not saying organic about it, and they really explain what they do in a really often very beautiful way, which is kind of almost unlike the normal wine educational way. And you just, when they walk out, you think, God, that person was so attached to their farm, their land, their village, their family, and they transmitted that perfectly to the listeners. I find those interviews really quite moving sometimes. And then you get the kind of corporates who are very professional, and they give you the sales statistics, the surface area of the vineyards, the altitude, the soil type, the da-da-da-da-da. And they're also very useful interviews. You try not to interrupt me. Say, okay, this person has lots of facts. Let's just get the facts.
Yeah, yeah.
They're doing their job. Whether they go home and love wine or don't, not interested, they're giving great information. Like a sort of a resource, if you like. So don't interrupt, just let them go with the flow. They're doing their little spiel, but it's a good spiel, so let's leave it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there are some people who have a very good spiel, or, you know, they've said it so many times. I'm like that with my some of my tastings, you know, because I've done so many tastings. I have a set piece of content that I know I can deliver that's very good for most audiences. And so you land up relying on that a little bit, and I think you get the same sort of thing with some of them.
I mean, also there's the entertainment business. I mean, obviously when you're teaching or podcasting or whatever, I mean, there's partly information, but the BBC line about informing people, educating, but also entertaining. It has to be a little bit entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise it just gets a little bit, and wine can be very dry. I think wine is...
something so wet, it's
yeah,
can be dry. But
I mean...
It's a bit too serious. Some people take it a little bit too
Yeah,
serious.
But I mean, I guess if you had like the Stamp Collectors podcast...
be careful, I click stamps.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
I'll show you. I've got a stamp collection from when I was young. I'll show you mine. I've got some. Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So what, New Zealand stamps?
Yeah, just New Zealand.
Just Kiwi?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've got... when I was a kid, I used to collect stamps. And
did you used to collect other things like butter?
I just collected stamps from all over the world, because when you're in New Zealand, you're isolated from the rest of the world. So, but then about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I was like, do you know what? I miss New Zealand. And one of the things about it was, there was all, you know, because what is a stamp? It's a set of iconography that represents, hopefully, the culture that you're from. And so it was a way of seeing lots of pictures. And some of them, because when I was collecting as a kid, I remember that stamp. Oh, I remember getting that one. And do you know, and it's just nice. It's nice for me for reminding me of home.
Yeah, that's funny. What are stamp collectors going to do when we don't send letters anymore?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping no one will ever collect stamps again, and they'll throw out their old stamps. My ones will become very valuable.
You got to come to my attic. We can go through my stamp collection.
Oh yeah,
first day covers.
Oh no, I don't have many of those. My brother wrote all over them. I had a younger brother. He found my first day cover selection. Yeah, first day covers, stamp envelopes with stamps on them that are dedicated for the first day that stamp was released. My brother found them and wrote all over them too.
No.
I was so upset.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Because they're the ones that were the most valuable.
But if he's famous, if he becomes like a famous physicist or something, you can say, well, actually, not signed by.
Yeah. When he was three.
Okay, well, then. Early work.
Early works, yeah. So, yeah, I don't tell many people I stamp collect. But anyway, so back to the Italian Wine Podcast.
So I'm doing everything I can to steer you away from it. The stamp diversion was fantastic.
It was a good one. Tell me about the regions. You know, how do you get that across to people in an easy way? Is it just by covering the regions, or do you try and give an overview or how it fits in?
We don't really have a... we're not kind of going region by region. It's more producer by producer. We haven't really, as far as I remember, had somebody that actually just talks on, say, Tuscany.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about sort of lesser regions, smaller regions, as in sub-regions, like, say, Vulture or Vulture of Aglianico, if it's a producer in there, we'll say, tell us about your particular terroir and also tell us about the area in general. So you're in the northern part, the high part, the low part, the calcium part, the volcanic ash part, the clay part. And then you can wheedle out of them where they sit in that particular denomination.
Yeah.
And then that obviously informs their winemaking style and their winemaking approach.
I had a really good interview with a guy called Ian Dagata.
Ian, yeah.
Yeah. And I got him to go through Italy at a very high level. And I sometimes listen to that podcast because at the time he just explained it really, really well.
How long ago was the interview?
Oh, this was a long time ago, 10, 15, 12 years ago.
One of the real experts on Italian wine, he has written a book called Native Wine Grapes, which is a huge, great tome, which talks about all the different varieties of grape in Italy and often the confusion that surrounds them with grapes of the same name actually being different.
Trebbiano.
Yeah. So it's called Native Italian Wine Grapes, published by University of California Press. I think he's going to redo that with a new updated edition. But yeah, great guy to talk to about Italian wine.
Yeah, he had a really
great communicator.
Yeah, he could
nails it.
Yeah, he nailed the entire Italy in about 30 minutes. It took him to really just give you a really solid overview. And I listen to that all the time. No, not now, but when I was first trying to get my head around Italy, because I was saying earlier to you, I have trouble with names of places and people and things like that. And so I can't focus on names because it just goes in and straight out the other end.
If you talk about, it's not always easy in a podcast when somebody says, we have Vermentino, and you're like, well, which one? There is only one Sangiovese, for example, but there are different Vermentinos or Pigatos. And that can be quite tricky when you're trying to remember, right? Is Pigato the same as Vermentino? What's the scientific debate about it? That is difficult to do. And often you just have to just let them go with it and just say, your white wine is made with Pigato, whatever that is, or Vermentino, whatever that is, and just let them go with it.
Yeah. No, there's a problem. Well, in the sort of 3 years you've been doing podcasts, what was your best interview?
Oh, it's like you're like your favourite kid, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
We've only got one child. They're pathetic. I can't really say. It's interviews, as I think I said before, that when you interview somebody that is clearly has a deep emotional connection with the land that they farm, however they farm it, whether it's organic, biodynamic, conventional, whatever, and you really do get the sense that they are really of that particular place. And everything that they do to their wine is an expression of them, their local culture, their family history, and the place they're in. Those are the interviews that do I find quite moving sometimes. You know, we live in a globalized world. We're almost doing everything we can to get rid of any kind of root that we have. We're so mobile as humans. And it is nice to hear people who just literally may not leave their village for months on end, because that's what they do. They farm. They're real farmers. And I think we've lost a lot of our love or knowledge and respect for the farming community. The farming community is the community that really is going to dig us out, I think, if we can dig ourselves out of the hole that we've created with climate change. Obviously, farming in general has a big impact on the environment, on our water, on our air, on our soil in terms of erosion. And finding producers that are aware of that and are working to try, I know you may not agree with all of this, but to put a little bit more carbon back in the soil than they take out, as well as enjoying what they do. I find that very stimulating and very emotional.
And just lastly, what's your favourite Italian wine?
The last good bottle I had with friends. So it's difficult at home because Savannah doesn't drink.
No, really?
Well, when she was three, there was a christening or some event, wedding, and one of her grandparents gave her a glass of beer. So obviously, she was sick for, I don't know, 3 days. She's worked for wineries. She's a chartered accountant. She does the books of various wineries in Tuscany, but she just doesn't drink.
Okay.
So if I open a bottle of wine at home, it will take me 3 days to drink it.
Yeah.
So in a way, that's quite good. But she's good at taste. She'll stick her finger in and taste it. So that's tannic, or that's strawberry, or that's lemon, or whatever. She's got a good palate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That didn't really answer your question, though, was it?
No.
Yeah. Well, I've tried to avoid every single question you've asked me. I've done my best.
Given that you drink by yourself.
I live on my own. I have no friends. A lot of cobwebs.
No, but you'll enjoy a glass. In the UK, you're seeing a lot of smaller format bottles. 1875 or 100 mils or whatever it is. Do you see that in Italy?
No.
You don't?
No, I haven't. I mean, I don't. I mean, in the local stores that we have, they don't. I've never seen those formats. I mean, the advantage for me is if I have a bottle of wine, it takes me 3 days to drink it. So I can see how it evolves over 3 days.
Yeah.
You know, if it falls apart, if it develops, and that helps inform comments that you may make on the wine if you have to write a tasting note or somebody asks you about it. But not so far. I'm sure the smaller formats will come because there's obviously a lot of pressure on consumption. But I think in Italy, the wine, I've never seen. I can't really remember seeing Italians, young Italians, going out and coming home really screaming drunk. There is that culture of wine is it's a food.
Yeah.
It's not a way of getting off your head.
Yeah.
When I go to England to do stuff, and I'm out late, you see rowdy people sitting on the pavement, not looking particularly
healthy.
Yeah, right. And so I do think that element of wine with food is still quite strong in Italy.
One of the things I've noticed getting out in Verona the last couple of nights is a lot of people drink wine by the glass.
Yep.
We made the mistake. We went to a restaurant and we thought, oh, we'll have a bottle of wine. So we ordered a bottle of wine and it turned up. And it turned up about the same, almost 2 seconds after we'd put our order in. It turned up along with our meal. And our meal was, it was over in about 10 minutes because it wasn't a big meal because we'd been eating during the day. And all of a sudden, we'd had like a third of a bottle of wine and we'd finished. We're sort of thinking, what the hell are we going to do for the rest of the evening? We've got this bottle of wine to drink. And it was a little bit of a... I looked around, there was no one with bottles of wine everywhere. Everybody was buying by the glass. And some of the restaurants and wine bars we went to, there was awesome lists of wine by the glass. That was...
Well, in Montalcino, where I spent a lot of time, all the wine shops have the... I think it's the Vinomatic system where you can just pour yourself a glass. And obviously, if you're dealing with Brunello, you may be paying 15 euros for that particular glass. But if you bought the bottle, it might be 100 euros. So it's a pretty good way of doing it. And I have, funnily enough, with Ian Daggett, when he came to Montalcino, we went in all the wine shops and tried some wine. It's, wine by the glass, it's why not? It makes life easy. And it's also cheaper as well. And you can try more if you're a student. Obviously, you do wine education. If you're a student, you can maybe between you buy four different glasses and each one sips. So you get to taste four wines for the glass for the price of one.
All right then, Monty. I think we'll wrap it up there.
Did I bore you enough?
No.
Difficult questions.
No difficult
questions. What's going
question.
On? You're smiling.
Yeah, no, I was smiling. <That's right.
laughs> I was expecting a grilling. I'm quite disappointed.
Oh.
Hand-to-hand combat.
No, it's all good, mate.
All right. Nice one, Chris.
Cheers, bud.